MSP marketing in bite-sized bits. It's easier than you think with MKLink. To get more of MKLink's MSP, MBA, marketing and IT training resources, make sure that you've registered for your account for free now at www.mklink.org. Rampant referrals for MSPs, part 3. Okay, so for last time we saw that to complement the statistics that we saw in session 1, the main benefits to MSP owners for optimizing referrals were identified within the categories of cost, or lack of it, feedback, both internally and externally, trust, we looked at all the stakeholders along the trust train, and morale, we finished off by looking at reviews and referrals in terms of recruiting and retaining your most important asset, i.e. your talent. And in this section, we'll look at how referrals can be sabotaged. And in my experience, this falls broadly into 5 separate categories, namely service, motivation, personality, environment, and communication. So let's look at these in turn. Service sabotage. Now, the reason I've started with service is because, of course, your service is the fundamental aspect of your business that people rely on. They absolutely rely on IT support, and you're in the service industry, which means that people need, want, and expect just that, i.e. service. But they won't necessarily tell you if they don't get it. In fact, there's one well-cited study, I think it was from Forbes, I believe, which found that 96% of people would leave a supplier if they were unhappy with the service. Now, okay, perhaps that's not that shocking. Of course people will leave you if they're unhappy. But the same study also found that 91% of people simply won't tell you if they're unhappy with their service. They'll just leave and go somewhere else. Now think about that for a moment. 91% of people won't tell you if they're unhappy with you, according to that study. But you can just bet that they will be willing to tell other people. In fact, around 15 other people, according to some sources. Now imagine that. Let's say you're a restaurant owner rather than an MSP owner. Customers come in and they try your food, and because we're all very polite and we don't want to cause a scene or hurt people's feelings, 96% of us will leave that restaurant because of bad service. But 91% of us won't even tell the restaurant owner or the staff that we were unhappy with them. But then we'll gladly go and tell 15 of our friends. Well, there it is. That's what we're up against. This is why making sure that your service is excellent. And not only that, it has to be seen to be excellent too. And these are, of course, 2 slightly different issues which people forget. Now, I think it's fair to say that being good at what you do is pretty fundamental to being in business. And as an aside, when I speak to most MSP owners and ask if they have a USP, their typical reply is somewhere along the lines of that their customers really relate to them and that they're better than most of their competition and they're good at what they do. To be clear, being good at what you do is not a USP. It's simply the entry price to the ticket to the party. But that's a conversation for another day. Funnily enough, I've yet to hear the owner of a business say that they're not very good at what they do and they hope that nobody finds out about it and that most of their clients hate them. Funnily enough, it never crops up in conversation. So let's just assume that being good at what you do is taken as standard. And just to reiterate, for the sake of getting the point across, there's a difference between being good at what you do and making sure that your clients see and hear that you're good at what you do. But we'll cover that off in the section about communication sabotage. So if everyone's got this opinion that they're good at what they do and that they're better than average, then where is the average MSP hiding out? And the answer is, it's the same place that ugly babies hang out. Because of course there must be ugly babies out there, but not our own of course, it's always someone else's. Now, we've already covered the Dunning-Kruger effect, where we have a cognitive bias in which people with limited knowledge or competence in a domain overestimate their own ability, whilst those with more expertise within that domain underestimate it. But that's just one of dozens of biases. There's the illusory superiority or above average effect, then there's the confirmation bias, there's hindsight bias, anchoring bias, availability heuristic, attribution bias. The list is a very long one with literally dozens and dozens of effects and prejudices and biases, and that's just for those people who are largely unaware of their own blind spots, let alone those staff members who are willfully sabotaging their work. In fact, it's a wonder anyone ever gets anything done. Okay, so if we all think that we're above average, then how can we see the reality of our service levels? Because if we can't trust our own senses and our own thinking, then what can we do? So this is where numbers come in handy, because they deal in absolutes. Now, I know that we probably live in an infinite universe, and there may well be life on other planets, and we could all be part of some great hologram, and I'm not really here, this is just in my imagination. But here's the thing, even if we are all in someone else's dream, I just can't conceive of any kind of realm where 2 plus 2 does not equal 4, or where pi does not always equal the ratio of a circle's circumference to its diameter, because that's how numbers work. Numbers are like facts, they're a form of truth, and that's because in and of themselves they can't lie. But of course, somewhere between the raw numbers at the source at one end, all the way to, say, political statistics at the other end and the interpretation of what they mean, we have a vast gulf of possibilities. So for the purposes of service satisfaction, I think it's important to keep it as clear and simple and unadulterated as possible. Remember that when I start rabbiting on about feedback scores such as CSAT and Net Promoter later on in a different episode. So we know that on an individual level, people have countless biases whereby they think that their skills and their abilities and output is better than it is. So we need to guard against it with objective feedback and data. And that's exactly the same when it comes to working with people on a team level or an organizational level. So let's just have a look at a few of these. We start off with no benchmarking at all. This is directly in line with what I've just said about the need for feedback processes. If you don't have any numbers in place at all, or any controls apart from a general feeling, then you're effectively flying blind and hoping for the best. The next one along is benchmarking against weak competitors. So if a company only compares itself to weaker competitors, it might think that its service is superior without recognising there's a bias there, without recognising there's areas for improvement, or acknowledging the stronger, better competitors. Now, you'll probably appreciate this from a different perspective. If you tend to regularly play, say, golf or tennis or chess or whatever with your friend or friends, and they're a bit worse than you, then perhaps soon enough you'll find it a bit dull or challenging. Equally, if you play against people who are better than you, then you might find it more difficult, but you will find it much, much more rewarding when you win. Of course, at the time when you win, you might not say anything out loud for fear of being seen to be obnoxious. Not that I'm personally crippled with modesty myself, because whenever I catch more trout than my friend, I'll cheerfully crow on about it for what I'm sure must seem like forever, but I digress. If you keep scores in your business, and you should, then it pays to benchmark yourself against the other people that can pull you up rather than the ones that would drag you down, as the saying goes. So hopefully that's where MK Link can help their members. So the next one along is misinterpretation of success metrics. Now, what that can mean is that companies could reflect on metrics that reflect well on them, such as number of services sold or short-term customer satisfaction like a CSAT score, but they might neglect more critical and longer-term metrics like customer retention rate or lifetime value or net promoter score or referral rate and things like that. Keeping metrics is all very well, but technical people can very often be focused on technical things because, of course, that's what they like. But the trouble is, whatever business you think that you're in, the fact is that you're actually in the people business. And it used to make me laugh when I used to work for an ISP back in the 90s. They'd cheerfully promote the fact on their collateral that their customers' websites would have an uptime of 99.5%. But what they didn't tell people, unsurprisingly, was that their engineers never got to work before 10 o'clock in the morning. And in fact, the lead techie was smug and he used to really frustrate the clients. Ultimately, from all the service calls, they ended up hating dealing with him, and I'd have to end up dealing with some of the service calls. But again, I digress. In short, that company was looking through the wrong end of the telescope when it came to their numbers. We'll look at some simple KPIs and numbers later on in this series, but for next time, we'll finish off with how MSPs are self-sabotaging their referrals in terms of their service.
MSP marketing in bite-sized bits. It's easier than you think with MK Link.
To get more of MK Link's MSP, MBA, marketing and IT training resources, make sure that you've registered for your account for free now at www.mklink.org.